And in fact, the Journal of American College of Cardiology published a state-of-the-art review this summer called Saturated Fats and Health, a Reassessment and Proposal for Food-Based Recommendations. It actually concluded verbatim that low-carb diets high in saturated fat, which are popular for managing body weight, may also improve metabolic disease endpoints in some individuals. However, hey everyone, Holistic Lexi here. Thank you for tuning in to my podcast, Nutrition Intuition, where I discuss current events and trends in nutrition and bridge the gap in the faults of mainstream science with state-of-the-art research and intuition. Please don't take this in any way as medical advice. It's purely for entertainment and education. I still encourage you to do your own research, of course. Please leave me a rating or a comment on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you're listening on. Your feedback is much appreciated. Enjoy. Hey everyone, Happy New Year. Welcome to my podcast. Today we will talk about how the new US dietary guidelines for 2020 to 2025 are actually contributing to the pandemic. And I don't just mean the viral one, but also the existing pandemic of diabetes, metabolic dysfunction, and obesity that's been existing for quite some time. So last week, the new US dietary guidelines were released, and before I go into them in detail, I just want to clarify why they are important. These guidelines are used to dictate food policy, assisted meal programs, and meals at schools, so it has a big influence on the health of a population. The major highlight that was in headlines is that the USDA rejected recommendations from the scientific committee to reduce added sugars from 10% of total calories to 6% of total calories. Just to give you perspective, let's say you have a 2,500 calorie per day requirement. This is based on a 45-year-old male who is 5'8 and 180 pounds. He may be sedentary to low activity level. Just to give you some reference, the same caloric requirement would also apply to someone who's 6 foot and 180 pounds who may be less active. So 10% added sugar would equate to 250 calories from added sugars. This is from a 2,500 calorie per day requirement. So if you divide the 250 calories from added sugars by 4, because there's 4 calories per gram, that's 62.5 grams of added sugar. And there's 4 grams of sugar in a teaspoon, so that's about 15 to 16 teaspoons of added sugar a day, which means the guidelines are approving up to 15.6 teaspoons of added sugar for this calorie requirement per day. And a male who is 5'8 and 180 pounds has a BMI of 28, which likely means he has some metabolic dysfunction, such as glucose intolerance or insulin resistance, that would qualify him as pre-diabetic. So having that much added sugar or any at all when someone is glucose intolerant is like adding fuel to the flame. And it definitely does not address the correction of metabolic dysfunction that's needed in someone with his condition. So my question is, how is this permitted to be suggested when this is not appropriate for the majority of the country? And these suggestions could negatively impact prevention of acute diseases such as viruses, since the increased inflammatory state of people with metabolic dysfunction also hinders their immune function. So the scientific committee making these suggestions to the USDA and Department of Health and Human Services has strong reasoning to propose less added sugar from the total calories. About 72% of USA adults 20 years and older are overweight, and around 42% are obese. These are extremely alarming numbers. Additionally, 21 to 24% of children and adolescents are overweight. 21% of adolescents between the ages of 12 and 19 are obese. 18.4% of children 6 to 11 years of age are obese. 14% of children 2 to 5 years old are obese. So unfortunately, adolescent obesity is predictive of adult obesity, with an 80% likelihood that obese teenagers will continue to be obese into adulthood. One positive thing that the guidelines did recommend is that for children below the age of 2, to completely avoid foods and beverages with added sugar. However, I personally think the same guidelines needs to apply to children older than 2 years old, as childhood and adolescent obesity driven by sugary beverages is rising, And sugar is highly addicting to children. And at such an age where children are learning to talk, walk, it's really crucial for them to start learning these healthy habits at a young age for it to stick with them. I'm also happy about the guidelines that recommend exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months. Breast milk naturally has a higher ratio of fat to protein than cow's milk, for example, which has a higher protein to fat ratio than breast milk. And one phenomenon that is alarming is the excess fat deposition in children and infants when protein to fat ratios are altered. Other dilemmas with infant formula is the addition of vitamins and vegetable oils like soybean oil, canola oil, safflower oil, sunflower oil. These have a high ratio of omega-6 to omega-3, which is not really seen in nature. Currently, the American diet has a ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 of 20 to 1 or even higher in some cases. So it should really ideally be 1 to 1 or lower. So some other benefits of breastfeeding include that the breast milk initially provides the colostrum, which helps to strengthen the immune system of the baby. Also, the human milk oligosaccharides, which are essentially just sugars in the breast milk, provide important prebiotics and probiotics essential for the microbiome of the baby. And again, this helps to build their immunity. It also provides vitamins and minerals and amino acids that are essential for growth and physical and cognitive development. So this was a really positive guideline, and hopefully people will follow it if they can. So some other highlights of the new guidelines include the oils they suggest are vegetable oils that are high in polyunsaturated fats as a source of fat rather than saturated fats. If you've ever seen the Heart Healthy logo on things like corn oil in the grocery store with the American Heart Association logo on it, those are the kind of oils they recommend. So that's soybean oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, canola oil, corn oil. If you look at their fatty acid composition, they have a high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio, and that's not typically seen in nature. Omega-3 is the good essential fatty acid. It's the one that's anti-inflammatory, where you get from salmon and eggs and things like that. This disproportionate ratio, unfortunately, leads to metabolic diseases. And when combined with refined carbs and sugar in the diet, it can lead to more metabolic dysfunction. In fact, there was a study that examined breast milk with a higher ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids and concluded that the breast milk with higher ratios of omega-6 to omega-3 increased the expression of genes involved in lipogenesis, so making of fat, and infants drinking the breast milk with a higher ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 can increase the risk of the infants having insulin resistance and obesity later in life. So the study didn't specify why some breast milk had higher ratios, but I would imagine it has something to do with the maternal diet and the fatty acid composition of the oils that the mother was eating, since the nutrients in breast milk are a reflection of the maternal diet. And of course, we get these high ratios of omega-6 to omega-3 from these polyunsaturated fatty acid vegetable oils that the government has been recommending for years and years. So the guidelines also recommend low-fat dairy, and I know dairy is not for everyone. However, it is important for, you know, as a source of calcium for children that are growing. The schools use low-fat dairy with flavors, so it likely does have added sugar. But what good is low-fat if you're going to add sugar to compensate for flavor? There's also no evidence that saturated fat is a contributor to diseases. So the guidelines are really emphasizing lean cuts of meat, low-fat dairy, avoiding saturated fat. And in fact, the Journal of American College of Cardiology published a state-of-the-art review this summer called Saturated Fats and Health, a Reassessment and Proposal for Food-Based Recommendations. It actually concluded verbatim that low-carb diets high in saturated fat, which are popular for managing body weight, may also improve metabolic disease endpoints in some individuals. However, the government and other associations like the American Heart Association continue to vilify saturated fats regardless of the quality of the source. Some things that I did not see any information on about in the guidelines was information pertaining to artificial sweeteners or non-nutritive sweeteners. So artificial sweeteners would be like the Splenda aspartame, Equal. Non-nutritive would be more along the lines of stevia, monk fruit extract. So in the 150-page booklet, I did not see any guidelines on those. So I think that's kind of a miss. Overall, the increase in consumption of added sugars and seed oils, along with lifestyle factors, have brought on this pandemic of increased prevalence of overweight and obesity amongst adults and children. And that usually comes with metabolic dysfunction, diabetes, hypertension, atherosclerosis, cardiovascular diseases, all comorbidities that compromise immune function. How are measures to flatten the curve of these rising statistics not taken into account in the fight against COVID? The World Health Organization just released released a statement saying the virus is mutating. There's no evidence the vaccine prevents transmission. It really isn't sustainable to only focus on the virus when it can mutate without addressing and correcting metabolic health and underlying conditions for those most vulnerable to viruses and other respiratory conditions. So overall, I find these guidelines to be inappropriate, especially when 94 to 97% of COVID deaths are linked to comorbidities. So when they are exposed to a virus, it's like pulling the trigger on a loaded gun. You can't mask and vaccinate your way to metabolic health. You still have to eat an appropriate diet that doesn't lead to metabolic diseases. It's also important to note that vaccines are less effective in obese and metabolically unhealthy people. So this needs to be taken into account. So yeah, that is my opinion on the guidelines and how they're not really helping address the pre-existing pandemic that's been going on for years before the viral pandemic started. So attention definitely needs to be paid to this. And I think the conclusion is just to ignore these guidelines because they're almost useless to anyone. So happy new year, everyone. And I will talk to you soon. So if you enjoyed this podcast, I'd really appreciate a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whichever platform you're listening on. Your feedback is much appreciated. Feel free to share it with whomever would find this interesting. And stay healthy.